Chapter 26. The palace shakes with the impact. The lights flicker. Dust streams down from the ceilings, where cracks appear in the smooth stone. Ray moves fast through the building, running now, not walking. Someone calls after her. Adia. But then another voice. Pandion, too. Ahead, the staircase and doorway to the landing ring. A staircase in lapis blue and copper, ancient and elegant, beautiful in its construction. But Ray is blind to all of that. All she sees is her pilot, Morna Key, staggering down the steps, a line across her brow blackened with soot and dribbling blood. Ray catches her as she comes down.
Are you?
I'm fine, Morna says. Don't go up there!
I need to assess, Sloane hisses, then hurries past her. Again, Pandion's voice behind her.
Stay back, you prig, she thinks.
She throws open the door. Sunlight, bleaching everything out. The smoke catches in her nose and clings there like an infection. A merciful wind rises then, pushing some of the billowing black away, and she sees the damage done. Three shuttles in various states of destruction. Crassus's yacht is not here. It took off again and went to orbit, an act for which she is suddenly thankful. But at the end of the row sits a charred lump of slag. A TIE fighter. One of their own. A suicide attack. Easy enough to see its path through the wreckage. It cut a diagonal line across three Imperial shuttles, smashing the back end of the first, the middle of the second, the nose and cockpit of the third, effectively destroying each, rendering them useless. A sound reaches her ears. A dull roar. She thinks, what could that be? Ray steps through the smoke, past the wreckage. The landing ring shifts beneath her feet, and the metal of one of the shuttles groans and bangs. But then everything is still once more. She shouldn't go farther, and yet she does. Her feet urging her forward without her explicit consent. At the edge, an old copper railing dusted with emerald patina. She presses up against it. The roar is the crowd below. A thin, wan crowd, but one that is strengthening even as she looks down. From other streets, Akivans move toward the palace. And that other sound she heard? Rocks. They're throwing rocks against the palace. None of them can hit her here. She's 100 meters above them. They look small to her as a crowd, but as a mass, they're growing. Like a spreading cancer. She turns around to behold the wreckage once more, and she realizes that did it. The fires of their shuttles burning lit the fuse. Now the bomb is counting down. The bomb of riot, rebellion, insurgency. It is at their doorsteps. Soon it'll be climbing up the walls. It hits her all at once.
This was engineered. This was orchestrated by someone, maybe one of our own. Maybe someone inside the satrapy. Someone has kicked over the pile of dirt to watch all the little ants spill out. And then, another thought. We are trapped here now.
The ring shifts again. She jukes forward, catches herself on the railing. Hands catch her elbow, pull her back. Morna.
Admiral, please! Back inside! Look!
Her pilot points. Across the way, on the rooftop of the old Capitol building, the one with the rusted tower they took out with the shuttle's cannons upon arriving here, she sees a few people climbing up there. Citizens, probably, trying to get a look. Or a shot.
Yes, Ray says. You're right. Back inside.
Outside the cantina doors and windows, a small crowd surges, moving down the street and toward the palace. Sinjir catches a flash of white armor. The crowd carries a struggling stormtrooper past. It worked, didn't it? It worked better than we even imagined. The TIE fighters destroyed the antenna at the comm station, and he feared that the message hadn't gone out long enough. But then, explosions at the palace.
Nora must have succeeded. That and the doctored propaganda they sent out. It worked. The city is responding. Reacting. All that pent-up rage? The cork has popped. Everything's foaming over now. It's not just from this one moment. Not just from the occupation. The Imperials have long toyed with planets like this one. Though never formally occupying them, they imposed tariffs and taxes on law-abiding establishments while letting the black markets and criminal syndicates go about their business, as long as they tithed back to the Empire. That was one of the striking things about seeing the Imperials fighting alongside Surat Nuat's thugs. It exposed that alliance bold-facedly, revealing what everyone always suspected, but few ever really knew. Across the Okawood bar, the Mon Cal with the droid arm slides across a bottle of something that glows green, like industrial slime waste. Sinjir gives him an arched eyebrow, and Pock just shoves it forward with another few centimeters, as if to say, "Don't ask, just drink." Well, that squid-faced fellow hasn't been wrong yet. Sinjir takes the bottle and heads to the table, where Temin sits next to his droid. Mr. Bones was here when they arrived, Pock's place being the go-to meeting spot for the lot of them after the operation's conclusion, and the droid looked even rougher, scuffed up, his metal scored in places. Several of his little osseous accoutrements have gone, which also means his bony jangle is no longer present. Otherwise, the droid looks pretty good for having cannonballed through the front windshield of a roaring TIE fighter. Still, Temin sits, chin on his folded arms, stewing, eyes narrowed. The tip of one thumb sits thrust in the kid's mouth as he chews the nail. Sinjir plunks down the bottle, takes a sip, and immediately makes a face. A taste fills his mouth that is somehow both bitter and sweet. Too bitter and too sweet. And the liquid is thick, almost gummy. It's awful stuff. His mouth goes a little numb. Huh. He takes another sip anyway. He looks around idly. The cantina is mostly empty, just a few old salts in the back drinking their drinks. Together but alone at the same time, somehow. Most of the crowd is outside.
"You drink that stuff?"
Temin says, not lifting his chin.
"I suppose I do. Not that I know what this stuff is."
"Pluie sap. Comes from one of the trees in the jungle."
Sinjir scrunches up his nose.
Well, it tastes like I'm licking the underside of a leaky droid, but I seem compelled to keep drinking it."
"More power to you."
"You're worried."
"Worried? About what?"
"Duh," he thinks.
"Your mother."
"Whatever. Mom's fine. And if she's not, you know, whatever."
"Yes, you said that already. Whatever."
Now Temin lifts his chin. His lips lift in a sneer.
"What? You don't believe me?"
"I believe every boy worries about his mother just as every mother worries about her boy. My mother used to whip my back with switches she pulled from the tree in our front yard. I hated her. But I loved her and worried after her just the same, because that's how sons and mothers happen to be. It is just one of the many truths of the universe."
"Well," Temin sniffs, "my mother abandoned me to go fight in some dumb war. So trust me, I don't care. I don't care."
Mr. Bones echoes,
"He does not care."
"If you say so."
"I say so. I do not care."
Timon's eyes flit to the door. Sinjir cranes his neck and sees Jazz walk in. Her gaze finds them and she comes over. But there's something in her approach, the slightest hesitation. Her body language screams, "I have bad news and I do not want to deliver it." Then the way she looks at Temin as she steps up.
"Oh, oh my."
Sinjir realizes what it is even before she says it.
"Temin,"
she says,
Your mother succeeded in her mission, but she didn't make it. Nora is gone.
Panic at the summit. A cacophony of competing voices, like a roost full of ill-kept birds. They all stand around the grand dining table, yelling at one another about what to do next. Holoscreens are cast about the table, projecting data at various stations. Data showing surging crowds, revealing their own casualties, offering predictions of what comes next.
How many ties do we have left?
Pandion barks.
Answer me, Admiral! How many are left on Akiva?
Adia eases the base of one of the holoprojector discs toward Rey, and on it, a casualty report. Sloane turns it toward Valco.
We lost 5 in that attack. 2 at the roof of the comm station that served as the origin point for the rebel propaganda, and 2 from whoever was in that stolen tie. That last fighter is the 5th. We lost half.
Half?
Pandion says with a huff.
We only have 5 short-range fighters stationed across the city?
Correct.
And how many troops?
A single company, besides what's here in the palace.
100. 150 stormtroopers. That's it.
And their attendant officers, another 20 or so.
So 120 Imperials for a city of how many?
Here, Shale speaks.
About 1 million.
Pandion asks the inevitable question.
Why don't we have more, Admiral? Why are we not better protected?
Truth is, he already knows the answer to this question. They all do. Negotiating this summit into existence was quick, but took a hero's effort. Sleepless nights, countless communiques, ceaseless bickering. They exacted out each little detail, down to the food they would be served, and the types of fabrics they desired in their bedsheets. They know why the city isn't locked down with whole battalions of stormtroopers, and yet Pandion asks the question, because he wants to whittle her authority down to splinters. She the stick, he the knife. So she answers him.
We couldn't have this look like a total occupation. The risk was low.
The risk is now considerably higher, wouldn't you say? We need more ships. We need to bring the Star Destroyers back. Recall them from the neighboring system, Admiral. Return them to orbit. We will return to our ships and make our escape.
Shale stands and throws her hands in the air. An unusual gesture for her, this physical act of exasperation.
How do you intend to make that escape? We have no ships of our own here. We are boxed into this palace by a population that has been long abused by the Satrapy.
Now it's Satrap Istra's turn to speak up. Gone is his strident, fawning obedience. Present now, a taste of venom on his tongue. His handsome, smiling face twists into a mask of desperation.
No!
He says.
You cannot mount this weight upon my back. I am not your pack beast here to carry your sins. I imposed the taxes the Empire demanded. I have been a loyal ally, implementing any program you wanted. And what do I get for it?
His voice goes suddenly high-pitched, a plaintive whine.
You shot a hole in the side of my palace! That turret took off the easternmost tower, a tower that has stood tall over this palace for 2,000 years!
A lie. Sloane knows that the tower the Turbolaser destroyed was relatively new, built by one of the Withra Fisps in the last 2 centuries. The design of that tower, the speckling of red brick spiraling up the side, the onion-shaped dome, matches the architecture of that period, not millennia before. Sloane pounds the table with her fist. The Satrap's jaw shuts.
I will not order the Star Destroyers to return!
Mouths gape. Crassus says,
We get to vote.
As has been noted, Rey says, decisions like these are best left to a singular authority, not a voting body. I am the acting fleet admiral, and I decide what to do with those ships.
Pandion counters.
You will bring them in. You must! From there we can bring in a shuttle, and the TIE fighters will give us enough cover. We must show strength. We will not merely sneak out and flee like scared Ryuku hares. We do not run from the fire. We must face it. Then we use the Star Destroyers to dispatch bombers, and we teach this city what it means to rise up against the Galactic Empire.
Right now, Shale says, the New Republic...
The Rebel Alliance,
Pandion says, correcting her.
The New Republic, she reasserts, does not know what to make of this situation. They have not sent a fleet because they do not know what awaits them, and they do not want to destabilize a world that could end up as their ally. As such, they wait, cautious, hesitant to play too strong a hand. They have made big gains, but they are cautious gains. They are not playing a reckless game, and so neither should we, Valco.
You craven, sniveling, soft-bellied! We will use Crassus's yacht to escape, Ray says, disrupting the tired argument between the Moth and the General. That is our way out. What?
Crassus says. His face goes red as anger rises to his cheeks.
What did you say? I will support no such thing. That is my precious ship, the Golden Harp. I do not consent to this.
And I do not care. You are not a true Imperial. You are a moneylender, a banker. There are others like you. And it would take only an Imperial writ to drain your accounts of their gold the way a swarm of red jacket wasps would drain the blood from their prey. Stand in my way, Arson, and I will execute you myself.
Pandion whistles.
Look who has found her teeth.
Crassus pales, the blood draining from his face.
You wouldn't.
I would. I will.
She draws her blaster, points it.
Do you consent?
She fires the blaster just above his head. He flinches, hands up, and gesticulating wildly as he babbles,
Yes! Yes! By the stars, yes!
Good. Make the call. Summon your golden harp.
Crassus nods, swallowing hard. And with that, the rest of the room goes back to tearing into one another. Pandion, though, for his part, gives Sloane a small, curious smile. She cannot dissect it. What lies behind that little grin, Sloane cannot say. Is he proud? Proud of her for asserting her authority? Or proud of himself for pushing her to this point? Is he simply amused at her efforts? That smile worries her more than a scowl. Adia leans up, whispers in her ear.
We have a new problem.
Ray thinks.
Not another one. What now?
She asks in a low voice.
You should see for yourself.